Hello, this is Brian Auten of Apologetics 315. Today's interview is with Michael Patton. Michael is the president of Reclaiming the Mind and Credo House Ministries, found at reclaimingthemind.org. This is a ministry of theological development for lay people. He blogs at Parchment and Pen at reclaimingthemind.org/blog and is also responsible for the development of the Credo House of Theology, found at credohouse.org. That's a theological coffee house, museum, and bookstore. The purpose of our interview today is to talk about the interface between theology and apologetics, advice for studying theology and doing apologetics, and hear about the work Michael's doing with Credo House. Well, thanks for joining me today for this interview, Michael.
Oh, thank you for having me, Brian. It's great to have you. Great to be here. Excuse me. I'm used to my own interviews that I do on my program.
Well, I'd like to say thanks for your great resources, especially your interviews and your blog, the things that you have available at Reclaiming the Mind, and all of your theology program lectures have been real helpful for me.
Oh, well, great. Thank you so much. It's fun. It's what I love to do, and it's always nice, as you know, to see that it's affecting people.
Well, now you've even got a Theology Lectures iPhone app or something. Isn't that right?
Yeah. And we're kind of jumping on the bandwagon like everybody else and putting together some applications. And we got staff member Tim Kimberly, who is kind of on the cutting edge of all that stuff. So he's real good at putting together apps and theology apps. So we got the theology program, which is kind of the core of our ministry, on iPhone now. So if you search theology program or just theology, we were able to get that keyword, which nobody had taken yet as of a year ago, and we took it. So anytime you type in theology, we should always come up first.
Yeah, well, it's excellent. I was having a look at it today, and it's just chocked full of stuff and great resource. Well, we'll link to that in the blog post, but as we get started here, would you mind telling our listeners a bit more about yourself and the ministry you're involved in for those who may not already be familiar?
Sure. My name, Michael Patton. I usually go by C. Michael Patton. Some people just know me as CMP from the blog, but I'm 39 years old. I live in Edmond, Oklahoma. I have been in ministry. I graduated from Dallas Theological Seminary in 2001. I was on staff at a place called Stonebriar Community Church that's in Frisco, Texas, North Dallas, for about 7 years. Right after I got out of seminary, I went on an internship there and stayed there for a long time as a pastor, and started a program called the Theology Program, which is a program of theological development for lay people, essentially taking the theological aspect of what I learned in seminary and giving it to lay people. So that became a very big focus in my life because it was utilized by a lot of churches and utilized this curriculum until it eventually became a full-time job and incorporated as a ministry called Reclaiming the Mind Ministries. Just a few years ago, we started our headquarters, which is our the first of hopefully a few of these that will come up over the years, called the Credo House, Credo House of Theology. It's a coffee shop that is devoted to theological conversation, but also we are trying to have the best coffee in the world. And I kid you not, we do have the best coffee in the world, and we don't take the coffee lightly because it's such an important bridge to bring in people from the outside world. So it's a great environment, theologians all over the wall, and theological phrases written in Latin where you have to ask what it means. And we're trying a new thing, bringing people on this bridge from skepticism, from suspicion, to more of a comfort level to where we can discuss theological issues with the audience. And so we have changed our name since then from Reclaiming the Mind Ministries to Credo House Ministries, and so that's what many people know us as.
Mm-hmm. It's a great thing you're doing there, and you really provide a lot of resources for teaching theology, especially, you know, theology for the lay person, as you said. And you've got a real big vision for that. And I'm wondering, as you look at the church at large, what do you see in terms of maybe the average theological equipping that's being done? What level would you like to see it at? And, you know, how can we make that happen?
Well, you know, I'm not quite as pessimistic as some people often are about the status of the evangelical church. I mean, I'm an evangelical. I love evangelicalism, and I hold to evangelical theology pretty much on every turn. There is a lack quite a bit in the sense of availability and material that is out there, or hope within pastors to press people hard. People may say, I don't want to press too hard or use these terms or bring up this controversial issue because it will run people off. And you know, I haven't seen that in the last 12 years of doing theology. All I've seen is that whenever you do these things, and whenever you do press people, and whenever you do put your confidence in them, they really respond. I remember a meeting. Chuck Swindoll was the senior pastor of the church that I went to, and I remember very early on in my ministry, in a pastor's meeting, Chuck looking at all the pastors and saying, "Guys, don't underestimate your people." And I think we underestimate people so often. We underestimate Christians, and in doing so, we underestimate the liveliness of the Spirit of God within them, and the desert that exists often whenever we withhold theology and say it's ivory tower stuff, or it is stuff for people who are only really interested or planning on going to seminary. This is for all of us. I mean, it is coming to know our God. It is saying God has revealed himself and that there are things about him we can understand with great joy and excitement. Jeremiah says, let not people boast in their horses or riches or own wisdom, but let him who rejoice in this, that he understands and knows me. And theology is the process of coming to understand God. And so out in the church, how is it? I think that there's a pessimistic attitude that people are scared to bring theology to the people, but I'm optimistic because I think the Spirit of God living within us gives us the ability to be optimistic all the time. People will respond because it's their God.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things I'd like to talk about in the interview today is sort of this interface between theology and apologetics. So I'm wondering how you would describe maybe the difference between apologetics and theology, of course, but also the overlap between the two, and how do you think they should support one another?
Well, when we created the theology program, there was it was a long process. It took me 5 years to go through and create workbooks and DVD sets for all 60 sessions, and it was going back and forth with different scholars that I have a relationship with at different evangelical seminaries, and it was a lot of fun. One of the hardest things was at the very beginning we said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to create a theology program, we're going to create a church history program, and we're going to create an apologetics program, and they would all be separate. But as we got into teaching people theology, we found out you just can't separate them. Whenever you're teaching theology, you got to teach the history of theology. And whenever you're teaching theology, you've got to get to the point where you're defending it. And so we found that, or at least I found, that apologetics is underneath the umbrella of theology. It is a subset of theology. It is something that you cannot distinguish from theology because it is theology. And, you know, doing apologetics is a very personal thing, especially for me. I am one who really grew up in a Christian church, grew up in an evangelical environment, but has gone through the process of really questioning those things quite a bit myself. And it's not so much just questioning them because I want to, you know, be able to tell my friend. Again, maybe it's a selfish part of my story. But in the end, I wanted to be able to defend it to myself. I mean, I didn't want to just be spouting things that I had been taught just to tell the same things over and over again without ever having thought through it. And so whenever you're doing apologetics, I think you got to see it as you're doing it with yourself. You know, you're defending it to yourself. And to the degree that you can do apologetics with yourself and ask the right questions and struggle with the issues yourself personally is the degree that you're going to be effective whenever you're called upon to witness to someone else. Because especially in a postmodern world, especially in an environment where people are so skeptical, so suspicious, so doubtful and confused. They want to see some real, legitimate, authentic theology that comes out of you, and that is going to issue forth in your defense of the faith. And so defending the faith is always going to be absolutely, completely tied to your theology and the way you have thought through the issues that are central to the Christian faith.
Well, kind of following on there, I asked you a moment ago about the state of the theological understanding of people in the church at large. But what would you say about the theological understanding that you'd like to see maybe for those doing apologetics? And to kind of clarify, sometimes people get into apologetics without any kind of formal or any kind of theological background, and then later perhaps go back to set those foundations in place, or some may even neglect theology proper and are simply out there studying or doing apologetics in some fashion. But what are your thoughts on how apologists or budding apologists maybe should be equipped theologically?
Well, I think, you know, whenever you teach something, you teach about 5% of what you've learned over the last week. A pastor giving a sermon, whenever he gives a sermon for 45 minutes, he's not, or at least he shouldn't have exhausted all of his resources. He has to have been put this together and been very intentional about it because of a broader understanding. And the theology is the forest, and the apologetics is the trees, at least in this situation. You got to know the forest before you get into the trees. And so whenever we're doing apologetics, I encourage apologists and people who are out there to defend the faith to seek to understand very broadly so that they can decisively and incisively begin to answer the faith that we have and the questions that people have. If the person is... We call this a one and answer will in the theology program in class number one. We say some people are one and answer will. All you want is the right answers to the question so that you can be prepared. But if you approach it like that, you know, just give me all the right answers. I'll write it down on a pen and paper, and I'll have it in my back pocket ready to answer the question. You know, somebody comes up to you and says, if God exists, why is there evil? And you pull out your notepad and you say, let me get to that part in my notebook. Hold on just a minute. And you, oh, here's the page. It looks like because God has a greater purpose, a greater good plan. Yep, that's it. Next question. And that really shows a lack of depth because you haven't really wrestled with it yourself. And so whenever we're doing apologetics, this should come from the depths of our heart, the depths of our being, the depths of our understanding. And it's not always about just giving an answer. It's about giving an authentic representation of what we know. And so many people just want to give an answer, and they want to either look smart or sometimes just legitimize themselves. Many people get into apologetics out of insecurity. I think that we can find this by people who are former atheists. We have so many of those that are out there on the internet right now that are blogging, that are debating. And, you know, they have as their calling card, I used to be an apologist for the Christian faith. Well, you know, sometimes I think, as you read the stories, they were an apologist because they were so insecure and they were trying to be a one and answer will, and they weren't really trying to wrestle with the issues at a profound level, and therefore that type of an apologetic failed them. But the type of apologetic that is really seeking to come to know God and to say, Lord, I'm wrestling with you. I'm Jacob who is ready to get my hip put out of socket because I want this blessing so badly. I want understanding. I want depth of my love for you to be birthed out of this wrestling match that I'm willing to have with you. And I know you're going to win, and I know my hip's going to be out of socket, but that's going to create an authenticity in me that will make my limp before people be more real and authentic and more real to myself as well, and my faith more real.
Yeah, that's really good, Michael. And, you know, what you were saying there reminds me of some of the things that I noticed when I was going through all of the different theology program lectures. And one of the things is you always emphasize wrestling through, you know, all sides of the issue. And I know that you hold a certain theological position, but you never put that as the goal that you're working towards in your lesson. Instead, you're presenting all the sides and presenting all the possible views. Can you talk a bit about the importance of just not just learning one perspective or being real narrow in our understanding or of a theological position?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we're Protestants. We're not Roman Catholic. We're not Eastern Orthodox. Catholics have a magisterial authority that they turn to, the Pope or the councils or the magisterium. The Eastern Orthodox usually keep it with the seven councils and the traditions of the church. One of the unique things that we have inherited is this Bible in every man's hand idea. And that is such a profound concept. I mean, it's something that basically what we're saying is we want you to know this yourself. And we're so committed to you truly believing this yourself that we're willing to put a Bible in your hand and back off to some degree. Doesn't mean we disregard who has gone before us and what has gone before us or the aid of others. I mean, my goodness, in the Credo House, we got all the great theologians hung up high, 20 foot high on the ceiling, looking over us so that we have this idea of the traditions that have gone before us. But in the end, we have to hand it over to people. We can't, as pastors and as teachers, act as their magisterium. And we've got to have this risk that if we teach honestly and openly and not dogmatically or magisterially, if that can be a word, that God is in control and God's going to be able to pull off what he needs to pull off. And he will honor our teaching. And so when it becomes to different issues that there are historic or contemporary legitimate options out there that people are arguing for, you can't hide it. People will find out later on. I mean, you can't shelter. You can't put yourself out on an island and theologically try to train everybody to be Reformed, Calvinist, dispensationalist, or whatever it may be. But you've got to put a Bible in their hands and back off. And that's what I try to do in my teaching is the best I can. I mean, I don't always represent everybody perfectly, but I try to understand everybody as well as I can. When I was writing a section on Roman Catholicism and in the canon of Scripture, I spent 2.5 years just talking to other Roman Catholics. Not just friends, but apologists for Roman Catholicism, and trying to understand them and understand where they're coming from. And I even went into a spiritual thing myself where I said, Lord, listen, I don't want to approach this as a one-and-answer will, that I'm looking just for the right answer, and give it to me, and I hopefully I'll put it down in these notes for the theology program. Well, I want to know the truth, and if any of these issues I need to change in, help me to change. And so whenever you're approaching theological issues, whenever you're approaching apologetics, there is a sense that you have to approach it, at least from the human side, that we could be wrong. And if you don't approach it like that, all you're doing is engaging in a study of confirmation of prejudices. I'm going to study this to show how I'm right. I'm going to preach this so that I can get an amen. And you've got to be willing to change. To the degree that you're willing to change in all of your studies is the degree that you're going to come out of it confident in whatever conclusion you come to. Now, I happen to come to the conclusion of the evangelical consensus about the central issues of the Christian faith, and I'm glad I do, but I still need to, the best of my ability, wrestle with it.
Well, very good. And again, I want to point people to the theology program as a good place to start for, you know, a great resource for theological training and a good starting point. Now, talk about, if you would, maybe certain pitfalls that you see that come from neglecting theological training in whatever degree.
Well, obviously, I mean, here's the first place we got to start. When we neglect theological training, what we're essentially saying, and theology is a big word, theological training sounds more academic, but I like to put it down a little bit lower. We're neglecting coming to know our God at a deeper level. Hmm. We're saying to God, hey, listen, you've revealed a lot about yourself, but it's a little bit too confusing, so I'm not going to wrestle with it. Hmm. We're saying, Lord, I know you want to come to know me, and that's fine, come to know me, but I can't come to know you. Either you can put it in a very positive sense, you're too great for me to be able to define in human language, or I don't have time for you, really, is what we sometimes say. And so, I mean, the importance is this. I mean, you get married. Just think she got married to someone, and he said, after you know, a few months of marriage, your wife sits down with you and says, you know what, I want to know a little bit more about you. You know, I know a lot about you, and we're married, but tell me about, you know, your where you grew up, and what was it like with your relationship with your sisters? And you would think that that's great. That's a part normal part of marriage. But your wife turns around on you and says, now let me tell you a little bit about my past and about me and about my personality, my likes, my dislikes. Let me tell you everything about me. And you say, no, that's okay. I love you so much, but I don't really want to know any more about you. And I think sometimes when we neglect theology, that's what we're saying. God cooked my meals. God contribute in the family circle in very practical ways. You know, make me feel better, make me at nighttime, you know, we'll take turns with the kids, that kind of stuff. But I don't want to get to know you in any profound sense. And God's what he's doing, because he's written a pretty darn big book, both in the Bible and in the sky, and said, I want to tell you about me. I want to tell you a whole lot about me. And you know what? I'm big enough, and I'm powerful enough, and I'm smart enough to be able to make it to where you can actually understand a great deal of things. Now, Moses at Sinai, whenever he gave the commandments to Israel, his swan song in Deuteronomy, he says, let him who rejoice in this. That's Jeremiah. But in Deuteronomy, he said, the secret things belong to the Lord. And oftentimes we look at that verse and we stop there and we think, oh yeah, the secret things, you know, those are very secret and the mysterious things. And anytime there's a mystery in my life, I'll appeal to that verse. But the emphasis of that verse is after the but the things revealed belong to us. There's a lot that has been revealed, by God to us, and they belong to us. They're part of our cherished possession in so much as they give us an understanding of God. And so you can come to know God. You can understand him profoundly. Yes, there's controversy. Yes, there's people who disagree on many different issues. But that does not alleviate us of the responsibility of that wrestling match with the angel of the Lord.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great advice and good stuff there. Now, your ministry does this phenomenal job of providing resources, and a lot of them are free, for training and equipping people to, you know, build this theological foundation. But what kind of advice would you have for those maybe considering a more formal sort of training? I mean, how does one know, say, that seminary is the right thing for them? Would you have any advice along that line?
Yeah, it all depends. I mean, if you're going into ministry, I always tell people in the situation, especially in the Western world where we live, and it's so available, you know, you really do need to get trained formally in some type of seminary. We've got enough of them that are good out there, and there's enough of us to be able to say, you know, we'll trust in the Lord to provide for us if we're going into formal ministry of some sort. And by formal ministry, I just mean full-time, you know, or whatever it may be. However, I mean, that's not for everybody, and it doesn't mean that, as I said earlier, that we're not responsible to come to know our God more. But whenever people are considering seminary, you know, the first thing I say is, here's the greatest benefit of seminary, of some type of formal seminary, is that you're really placing yourself under someone. You're placing yourself under the school, under the professor, under the reputation of a seminary, whatever it may be, but you're submitting to the authority. And we've got so much maverick theology that goes on out there, and so many people that are discipled through blogs or just through the internet. And we've got such great resources. I mean, you and I both use these resources online and use the online avenue. But in the end, we really need to be underneath the authority of someone and being able to be told we're wrong. This was a bad paper. You're misrepresenting this person's position. You preached, and whenever you preach, you know, you got this thing that aggravates me whenever you're up there on stage and you need to do something about that. I mean, all of these things, from the most theological to the most pragmatic, are placed under the authority of someone else. And whenever you're looking for a seminary and whenever you're trying to contemplate going to seminary, you say, why? Why am I going to seminary? And a lot of people say, I can get education anywhere else online. I can even go through the theology program. And I don't tell people the theology program is a substitute for seminary in any sense. We need to be placed under the authority of people. We need to be humbled in many different ways. The thing that we lose when we're talking about the internet and the distance that it has placed between us and our theological education is we lose that mentorship. And the mentorship is such an important part. You can't be mentored by a stream. You can't be mentored by a blog. You'll get if you get all your education online, you'll see just mainly the drive-by shootings of people that are just posting things, and they're not thinking about it, and they're not, there's just no suffering whenever you can sign on to a site and put your name as doubting and put whatever you want to on there and leave and never come back. And you see that and you think it represents the theological community that is out there. And we really do need to take our training more seriously. And I think seminary is a great place for that. Now, whenever you're talking about seminary, how do I know whether to go? That's really a different question. I think it has a whole lot to do with internal passions, number one. I mean, is that what you're driven to do? Number two, and I don't know which is more important, internal passions or the second one, is the encouragement of other people, the community of God. Have they come in and encouraged you to do the same thing, or is this just from you? I think whenever God makes major moves in our lives such as that he brings in other people to encourage us to do the same. And then number three, of course, is open doors, financial doors, seminary. Just being accepted into a seminary is an open door in and of itself. So I'd say those three factors come in: personal passion, the community of God's encouragement, and open doors.
Well, great advice there, Michael. And, you know, when I think about the Credo House, sort of making a coffee shop with a lot of theology books inside and a real atmosphere where people can connect and converse, the thing that comes to my mind is community. And you're mentioning there the importance of coming under the authority of others. But can you talk also about the importance of just being with others who are also, if you will, as you say, they're wrestling with the issues and discussing them and interacting about them? How beneficial is that, and how is that part of the way the church should be growing together?
Well, you know, I think it says so much about our education. I mean, it's very easy to get together with a bunch of people that already believe the same thing as you and agree with you, and so you're around reading books that you all already agree with. Whenever you force yourself into a little bit more broad community, it causes you to have to wrestle with things differently. Whenever somebody comes in and there's an environment of honesty, an environment of openness, hey, you can ask whatever questions you want, express yourself however you want, we're not going to judge you, we're not going to jump all over you, we're not going to tell you you're dumb, then people begin to open up and you begin to see, you know, this guy's over here and you know what, he wrestles with this issue over here that he doubts. He's never really been established in the resurrection of Jesus. How can he, is he a Christian? I'm not sure anymore. You know, if those types of things cause us to wrestle with things more than we would with black and white paper or on the internet. You have to look people in the face and you have to work through things differently. You know, this guy's been coming to the Credo House that is a Roman Catholic, and you know, my theology beforehand, the kind of black and white on a notepad in my back pocket, said that Roman Catholics can't be saved. But you know what? He seems to love Jesus, and I don't really know what to do with it now. This charismatic guy who speaks in tongues, and I've never spoken in tongues, he's sitting next to me, and how can he believe the same way I do about the authority of Scripture, yet at the same time speak in tongues? I thought people who spoke in tongues weren't, you know, at least not following the Lord as closely as I am. In community, in a broader community like that, you really have to wrestle with things differently. It's real life. And I'm not saying it dictates your answers, but it does cause you to get outside of those paradigms that can so easily be set up whenever we're isolated in our theological studies. Got to have people around you, and you got to see real life working out in them, not just yourself.
Well, again, very good. Now, I know your time is limited, but I want to ask you a few more questions just to get your advice and sort of pull from your areas of passion. So when it comes to theology, I wonder, what lesson maybe have you learned from your experience that you'd want to impart to those who are engaged in theological studies?
I think the first most important thing, hands down, is this. I may not have said this 10 years ago, but I can say it today, and like you said, with passion, it's very much a passion of mine. Every time I open up one of my classes, for the first 10 sessions of intro, we talk about this. Theology is such an incredible blessing. Coming to know God is such an incredible blessing. Understanding and knowing Him is such an incredible blessing. But it can create such an arrogance that is so diametrically opposed to that which we are learning in our Christian faith. We can get this sense to where we can actually belittle other people who do not understand or know things like us. We can carry ourselves theologically so arrogantly. I sometimes call this the dark side of theology. And it is the dark side. Sometimes I'm scared because I'm going to create theological monsters. And, you know, I'm a Calvinist, and I find this more in my Calvinistic circles than anything else. They just can be so mean-spirited. And sometimes I think to myself after I'm done or after somebody has been created as this monster, I say, was it worth it? You know, I mean, what happened, Lord? I would rather of this guy go back to a state of ignorance and just kind of this baby-like state of loving you than this teenager that is a know-it-all and all of a sudden arrogant, and I don't want to put in front of anybody, and I won't allow to teach anything. And that's the thing that I encourage people is if your theology doesn't humble you more, you're probably doing it wrong. If you don't come out of it more gentle, more kind, more compassionate, more understanding, understanding and sympathizing and empathizing, then your hip has not been displaced. You know, you're not limping. You gotta get out of this with a limp. And it's so important for us as people who passionately love the Lord to not arrogantly promote Him, but promote Him with such gentleness and humility.
Now, from an apologetic perspective, I know our listening audience is going to be many of those who may be those budding apologists or those learning to defend the faith, wanting to be better at what they're doing. But what advice would you have for them?
I'd say, first of all, we need apologists. We need people who are out there defending the faith. I mean, I think of people like Mike Lacona and William Lane Craig and what they do. It's so hard to put yourself in the circles that you have to put yourself in all the time. It's hard all kinds of circles, no matter what your vocation in life. But we're all called to be apologists, but some of you are going to be specifically called to spend your life just defending the faith. And one of the things, here's what I would say more than anything else, is make sure you keep a tight connection with your Christian community. A lot of times, young budding apologists want to take on the world. They say, I'm going to go out there, and I'm going to be able to defend the faith. Therefore, I'm going to read every single atheist book that's out there. I'm going to immerse myself in fellowship with atheists, because if I don't, then I'm not going to be that strong. And it's kind of like if you work out. You know, you say, I'm going to go out and get in shape. And you say, I'm going to really pump up my muscles. And so you go to the bench press machine and you say, I'm just going to do this nonstop until my muscles are strong. So you start bench pressing. After a while, you're exhausted and you can't do it anymore. You have to take breaks. You have to let your muscles heal. You have to have that time of recuperation. Even the big bodybuilders that are out there, they don't work out every day on the same muscle group. Usually they work out once a week on the same muscle group. And I think it's the same way whenever it comes to dealing with apologetic issues. Dig into it deeply, back out, think about it, contemplate on it, grab with your friends, have fellowship with other believers. You can get so involved in contrary positions and contrary communities that the involvement itself can disturb your faith. Not the intellectual things that they're bringing up, but the actual involvement. For example, I may go out there and say, you know, I've heard that there's a society that's called the Flat Earth Society. Or I've heard that there's a group out there that really believes in aliens. And so all I'm going to do is study about UFO sightings and aliens. And so you involve yourself in this community and conspiracy communities that, you know, 9/11 didn't really happen, or we didn't really land on the moon, or we were the ones behind 9/11. And if you get around those communities and all you do is you spend your time on there, I promise you, no matter how persuasive their arguments are, they could be nothing, but the community itself will begin to erode you to beginning to consider those things. And so sometimes people enter into this apologetic stuff, and they think they're going to take on the world, and then all of a sudden they begin to doubt their faith very profoundly. And they have one of two choices, they think. Either I'm going to get out of this apologetic stuff altogether, or I'm going to give up my faith, which neither one of those has to happen. We've got to pace ourselves and make sure, as Paul says in Romans chapter 1, I long to be together with you while among you so that we can be encouraged by each other's faith, both yours and mine. While we do not promote in apologetics the confirmation of prejudices, we do promote the confirmation of prejudices. I know that sounds weird, but there's a time when we do fellowship with other believers and bring ourselves up because, precisely because they believe the same thing we do. And you do not neglect yourself of that if you want to have, ironically, a more objective approach. And number two, to stay strong in your faith throughout your endeavors. So young apologists really, I think that that's one of the main things they need to be concerned with, especially with so much atheistic and non-Christian material that is available to them. You'll never be able to read it all. You'll never be able to answer every single question. Just pace yourself.
Well, I always ask my guests for their nuggets of advice, and I have to say that that is up in there in the, you know, in the top 10 as far as one of my favorite nuggets there that you've provided, so I appreciate that.
Well,
now, finally, Michael, I know that you've got a ton of resources available for training, and I know I haven't mentioned most of them, so if take a minute there, and what ones are you particularly excited about that you want to point our listeners to?
Well, the main thing we're excited about right now is just the Credo House concept itself. You know, it's a coffee shop that is a bridge from the culture into theology, and it's a great coffee shop, and we feel like it in itself on the walls is curriculum. It is just kind of a brand new thing, and it's just been going so well. I'm sitting up here pacing in the entryway of the Credo House, and people are just coming in left and right and having coffee and asking who the theologians are, and lots of stuff, and that's the main thing. We want to plant these. We're hoping to plant one in Dallas as our next one, but we want to keep on planting these to aid the church, come alongside the church, to help the church, for fellowship among pastors, for a place that you can come and take a break and have a cup of coffee. So that's one of the main things that we do. Of course, there's the theology program, which is the most in-depth you can get with regard to our curriculum and where it all funnels to. The theology program is available online. It's available on DVD. You can find it all through our website on the iPad, iPhone. We're continuing to come out with updates. We should have a new update in another month for the iPad and the iPhone. That the discipleship program is a program that is just 10 sessions. Theology program, very in-depth. We'd love for you to get it started in your church, but be ready. It's a big commitment. Hour and a half apiece. Probably you need to set aside 2.5 hours every single week for this. But the discipleship program is something you would give to a brand new believer. Hey, help me be established in the faith. I just became a believer. What are the things I need to know about the Christian faith? And we did the discipleship program, which is a DVD set along with a workbook, and it's got 5 sessions on what 5 things have all Christians always believed. What are the most important essentials of the 5 things we believe, and then the 5 things that we do. So it's orthodoxy, right teaching, and orthopraxy, what do we do? That's the discipleship program. So the theology program, the discipleship program. Then we've got little boot camps as well that are 4 or 5 sessions apiece, essentials of the faith, church history boot camp, a boot camp on how to study the Bible. All of those things you can find on our website as well. And they're great resources for small groups, for large groups, for homeschooling, or just to take individually.
Well, super. Michael, it's been a real pleasure speaking with you, and I appreciate your time and your ministry, and thanks for doing the interview.
Hey, the same to you, and all the Lord's blessings to Apologetics 315, and I really do appreciate what you guys are doing. I've kept up with you a lot.
I have been speaking with Michael Patton, president of Reclaiming the Mind and Credo House Ministries, a ministry of theological development for lay people. Check out his blog at Parchment and Pen, and also the Credo House of Theology at credohouse.org. Links to these resources and more can be found at today's blog post at Apologetics 315. If you found this interview helpful, please share it with a friend via email, Facebook, or Twitter. Taking just a moment to do this really does help spread the word about a good apologetics resources, and you never know how it may help someone struggling with doubt or simply wanting to be a better defender of the faith. Be sure to check out other podcasts by Apologetics 315. Find them at the blog or in iTunes just by searching for Apologetics 315, including podcasts on logical fallacies, getting apologetics in your church, systematic theology, reading along with Apologetics 315, and this podcast, Apologetics 315 Interviews. If you're a regular listener or visitor to Apologetics 315, please continue to pray for this ministry as it grows, and if you have any questions or suggestions for this podcast, feel free to email interviews@apologetics315.com. This is Brian Auten, and thanks for listening.